I want to welcome all of you to our podcast, From My Kitchen Table, which is both inspired and created by our successful and award-winning Women Create magazines. For those of you who do not know me, I am Jo Packham, a small-town homegrown girl who had no big dreams of being the creator and editor-in-chief of your magazines, Where and What Women Create, among which we have profiled over 745 women from around the world in over 265 books and magazines. I am so thankful that you are here joining us today. Our podcast, which is for and all about you, will be coming to you weekly, so please listen on your platform of choice. The guests we have are visionaries who consist of artists, designers, foodies, and entrepreneurs, each taking us through the ups and the downs of living a creative life. I will be introducing you to those in our industry, some well-known and some you have never met. These women have crafted amazing works of imagination, transformed cooking and baking into an art form, built successful businesses, inspired entire communities, and each has a story to tell of perseverance and triumph that will help each of us on our own personal journey. So welcome to From My Kitchen Table. This is the place to come together, to learn, and to share the passion, the process, the inspiration, the wisdom, and the journeys of living a creative life. I am going to start today's podcast by reading you the bio of today's guest. I'm going to tell you who she is at the end of the bio because I think you need to know all about her so that you can guess who she is. She is the creator of five groundbreaking published books. The first one, Spilling Open, was published when she was 23 years old, becoming to many the voice of a generation. She has gone on to publish Brave on the Rocks, Messy Thrilling Life, The True, and The Questions, plus The Story is Happening. She was born in Montreal, Canada, and moved to California with her family at 9. She went on to study photography and graphic design at California College of the Arts in San Francisco. In the spring of 2016, she and a childhood friend and fellow painter, Trenton Reynolds, launched the podcast Room in the Trees, which focuses on living a creative life. She has taught creativity worldwide for over 2 decades with a belief she holds strong to, that we must create what we most need to find. She is renowned for her in-depth online teaching experiences, full color life, getting into your deep creative flow, and liberate on publishing the book that is within you. After living many years in California and New York City, Sabrina has created her home in Madison, Wisconsin, which reminds her of her childhood in Canada. She lives on Lake Monona with her husband, Sean, and her pup, Rome. Let me introduce you all to Sabrina Ward Harrison. Sabrina, thank you so much for being on my podcast. It is such an honor.
Oh, thank you, Jo. It's a treat to be here.
As I was saying before, I have to tell our listeners that I have been a fan of yours forever and ever and ever. I have your bag that you designed with papaya. I have your journals. I have every book you've ever written. I just have been a major fan for as long as I can remember. So thank you for being on the podcast. It is such an honor for me to have you here, and I'm thrilled that our listeners get to hear your story and all about your classes and your upcoming adventures that you're going to take. So I am going to let you begin with what you would first like our listeners to know.
The first thing that comes to mind is that I was talking to my husband before the interview a couple of days ago, and he was saying, we were talking about some of the questions, and he said, make sure to tell them that you're still scrappy, even 20 years later. Like there's no point of like, okay, everything's streamlined and, you know, fluid now in my life. But still from the very beginning of making my books years and years ago and sort of the jerry-rigged making dreams happen, I still live that way. And surrendered to embrace that our lives are just a handmade journey and trusting the story's unfolding as it should. So
do you have a favorite book? Something that one of the books you've written that you love more than any other?
It's like having five kids. I love them all for different reasons, but I mean, I love Spilling Open because it was just the first but I really love Messy Thrilling Life about my time in New York. I really feel graphically that photography and juxtaposition. I think it's the one I'm the most proud of visually, I think, for really doing my own thing in it.
I love that too. I really do love that. So tell us about when and where you have felt your very deepest creative liberation.
So when I reflect on that, I think about, it was around 2008. It was right before iPhones came out and it was still the flip phone era. And social media wasn't a thing in my life. And I've been living in San Francisco and I ended up in this field of grass just south of San Francisco along the Central Coast, staying at this, eventually moving into this small one room schoolhouse in Bonnie Doon, this in the Redwoods. And I there was no cell phone reception. And I decided to just check out, you know, just say, I need to go, you know, sort of Thoreau style, live in the woods and just release creatively and like work big and loose and in the rain and outside. And it was the most incredibly creative window of my life. I created a huge body of work and would listen to David White and John O'Donohue outside lying on my back. And there was some guy named Troy who had a small dog named Troy, and he helped put a bathtub from the dump in the backyard. And I'd lie, you know, it just was this epic time. And it felt like, because I'd done at least four of my books already. And I just had to live for the fact of being alive and being free in this world. And that was very vivid, very vivid. And I would have like soot, you know, soot from the fireplace and little, you know, those old stoves, fire.
Right.
It was just epic. And I'm one of those, it could have been one of those times I could have started immediately into like doing social media and getting on it, but I never would have gotten that time back. You know, it was just this fraction, like once I came back and integrated back into things, it was like, here we go.
I mean, what was the research that you did to find a place to run away to?
So yeah, it's an interesting story. I was in San Francisco and me and the guy I was dating at the time kind of got hit by a car crossing the street in downtown San Francisco. And I wasn't hurt terribly or anything, but it just shook me up. And a friend I know, Amanda Jones, she and her husband have a place called Redgate Ranch in San Gregorio. This is kind of a protected land and a small little beautiful little cottage. And she said I could come stay there for a couple of months. So I did. And then from there, I just explored the area and I thought, this is magnificent. And it was a really profound time. So I then found this little schoolhouse and lived there. And I had this old Mazda Miata I'd bought on Craigslist that the hard top had flown off on the 101 freeway while I was driving it. And I would just drive like a bat out of hell down the one highway. And it was quite a time. Yeah.
So how long did it last? How long were you there?
Total about 2.5 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, so that was a commitment.
I mean,
that was a long time.
Yeah.
That's what I love about all of you who are so creative. I mean, I look at myself and I am a publisher by trade and very conservative and not very adventurous. And I think that's what's so fascinating when you all tell your stories, because we all get to live vicariously through what you all do. And it sounds like such an adventure. I mean, I would love to do something like that, but do not have the wherewithal to put it together or the stamina to stay, I don't think. So thank you for sharing. I think that's wonderful. Have you done anything like that since?
Well, it ended up becoming it kind of became a project I called the True Living Project. And then from that became the name of my company, True Living Experience, because I just felt like I want to give this experience to other people. I want to make this place that people can come to and lie on their backs and listen to poetry and create wonderful meals and sit around the fire together. And so that was it. That's the deep, my deep soul longing is to evoke experiences like that for other people, whether it's some time I create a place that people can do that, or I just help through my own work, give that permission and that encouragement to live outside the lines a little bit.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh, I love that you share that with everybody. So tell me, what are some of the things that you're thinking that you would like to do similar to that in the future? Have you got any plans made yet, or has all of this that's going on in our world kind of put a stop to that for just a second, or are you planning on the future things? Or
it's interesting, I was just talking to someone yesterday about this, because I'm 45 now, and am I 45 or 46? I think I'm 46. Whatever. And I just recently got married about 4 months ago, and for the first time, and I was saying how I'm so glad I got all this stuff under my belt. Like, I really did it. Like, I did life pretty full on. And I feel like the part of me now is really loving the quiet and, you know, being a partner. And I feel like I could never have gotten married before 45. Like, I feel like now I can soften into that place of has a different flow to it. So I don't feel that that deep need to express and evoke. I think I can hold the space for other people to do that now. So I think my online experiences are, it's beautiful to see the unfolding happening in other people. I love it. I just liberate.
Well, I have to tell the audience, I mean, like I said, I've been a fan forever, and I've seen pictures of you, of course, but we've never met or anything. And when you said, you look calm, you look very different. First, you are so beautiful. And sitting there in your studio, I wish, we'll put up a screenshot, but I wish everybody could see you, because you just look like someone everyone can trust and believe in, and the things you write are authentic. And I always had in my mind, I guess because of your artwork, that you were kind of a wild child, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I'm old enough to be your mother. So it's just when I listened to you, and when I followed you when you're in your younger years, I thought, I wanted to be you when I was your age, mm-hmm. and I was just too conservative. So it's interesting to hear you say that you're kind of entering a quieter phase of your own. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, tell us so you've done lots of mixed media books, right?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us what the phases of making a mixed media book are.
So I'm so passionate about this. It's funny, you know, there's so many things I'm bad at in the world, right? Like, I can't spell, can't do math, can't fix things very well. But I really understand mixed media books and how to make them. I'll start with what I think is a mistake artists can make with them, is that they try to put too much in the book. Like, it's like every collage piece, it's like chock full of art here from this period, full. And I think a book is like a film. Like, it's something, it has a beginning in it, and it's such an intimate experience. And there's something about looking at it the way we see a film, where there's scenes and there's quiet and then there's landscape and there's rest and then there's action and bold, you know, bold shots. And then there's, even with the typography, there's the bold inky writing, and then there's sort of the quieter whisper that's in pencil along the margins. So I really feel like, so I teach a course called Liberate about bringing forth the book within you. And a lot of people come in, they sort of think they know what, they either have no idea, or they think they know, they're ready to go and they think they know. And it's been really an amazing thing to watch and help and hold the space for that journey of it, because it's, some people come in, they think they know what their book's about, but then through the writing process and the exploring, there's sort of a few layers below that is the real soul of the book. And that's been so beautiful to see. So there's, before there's a, you know, people can come in and think that go into design right away and want to understand all the design parts and so on. But there's a really important phase of just honoring the gathering. Phase one is building the framework. It's honoring the gathering, the brainstorming and compiling material. And it's really a lot about mindset. There's that place about, there's so much that held me back at first from making spilling. I'm like, people are going to think I'm weird and, you know, stupid for doing this. And I think it 99% of my voices were saying, don't do this, don't share it, don't. But the 1% was like, if someone could breathe a little easier, I need to get over myself and just put it out there. Like, it's not going to hurt anything. And I'm so glad I did. And the same thing, like, we have to kind of work on that mindset and work on that ego part that just goes, how can we be of service in this world? How can we be a healing vessels in some form? And if there's something that someone can share that someone else can resonate with, then it's important for us to find that way to do it. And then the next phase is refining your vision and really, there's a lot of brainstorming and mind mapping that just, so you're just getting really to the heart and the nuggets of what the book's gonna, in like the themes that it's gonna hold. And so then the next phase is developing your themes and then developing a visual flow. So you're thinking about, like, I look at Spilling Open and it has five internal chapters to it. And they're kind of like the season. So there's within each theme, it's very subtle, but there's a color palette and there's aliveness, belong to yourself, loving, realness, and faith. And each one, there's an important order to the book, even though the book isn't a perfect, you know, timeline. There's a way that it's important that each phase leads to the next phase. The next phase four is power photography and design, combining imagery and text. And phase five is layout, sequencing, and cohesion. And phase six is planning and presentation.
I know from the questions that we receive, both in the books that I've written and in magazines, everybody wants to write a book. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to write a book. And so how long do you think it takes you on the average from the day you start until the day you send it to press that it takes to write a book?
Great question. I believe it's the same gestation as a child, a baby. It's 9 months.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I think people are, I think they have the misconception that you get an author gets an idea, they sit down and write the book, they do a little bit of editing, and then they go to press, right? So I can see you shaking your head no. So tell them a little bit about how many times you throw it in the garbage and how many times you start again, and maybe on some you do and some you don't. Maybe some flow so easily because they've been in the back of your mind for so long that you really can sit down and it's an easier process than other times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it, of any creative process I do, I find this making a book has the most alchemy to it, because there's just these moments of you're wrestling and you're trying to think, you know, especially with creating spreads or linking between this thought to this thought, this emotion to this. And it's the kind of thing that's one of those 2 a.m. things that you're like, oh, it's that little piece that I've had, you know, that was stuck on my foot the other day under my sock that would be the perfect little bit for right in the corner on this page. And it's really, that's the fun part, is because people come in and they think, oh, they want to make these pages that are all this size and they fit in the book. And I'm about working big and loose and then cutting down to different scales so you can work, that you're not inhibited by this sort of small page size to work with. So, you know, the pages can be, you know, a dress, so you can do something that's more photographic, and then that can be brought down to size for the page. So it's not about staying inside the margins, it's like going over the lines, giving it that dimension. And I'm waving my arms back and forth as I explain it.
That's why I hate podcasts, right? Because we all talk with our hands. Yeah. And we all want visuals to show everybody what we're talking about and those kinds of things. And in a podcast, you don't get that. So that is why they have to take your class so that they can, all your classes, so that they can see all of those kinds of things and get that part of the, you know, the words are important, but the visuals are important too. People yeah. need to see what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I will be doing a free 3-part workshop in the first week of February. So that can be just to give people a little bit of a sense of it. So
that- and we'll put, and I'm sure it's on your website, the information for the class, and we'll put it on our website with the podcast, and we'll post about it on Instagram so that we can help remind people, because it's an opportunity that they shouldn't miss. It's a gift that you as an artist give to the rest of us to share what you know and to teach us to do different things. It's interesting because in the early days when I wrote books, where artists would develop a technique or an idea and they didn't want to share it because they were afraid people would copy it. And I used to try to explain to them that that isn't true, because we all have our own perspective and how we see things and how it ends up on the page, right? And an artist is always one step ahead of everybody else anyway, so you don't have to worry about that. But so I think with social media and everything, there is more sharing. There has to be.
Yeah. Because
everything's just out there, right?
Right. Yeah.
Do you like to teach? Are you?
I love it. And both my parents taught. My dad taught film and my mom taught early childhood education. So yeah, it really fits with me. And I'm such a weird teacher, you know, you just never know what you're going to get with me.
Tell us why.
I'm just weird. I mean, as a person, I'm random. And I mean, I'm calm, but I'm also not hiding anything. Like, I'm not just trying to just be perfect. So it's, I try to show my vulnerability, and I don't feel I need to hold it back. So.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's really nice, because I think we all feel we all feel like we are the only ones who feel mm-hmm. vulnerable. We think everybody else is very secure and knows exactly what they're doing. And so so if it takes you about 9 months to do a book, which I think is a great analogy, then do you publish your own books? Do you have a publisher? What is your next step after it's created?
So I, right now, people have all, like, I've got this big, this big stack of books. Right now, what people have, we've been using Blurb to publish them, and then they can be sold on Amazon, and then they can go and be, so people are selling them, either they're selling them through their own website or Amazon or Blurb, or else they're taking them to another a publisher. I encourage people to do it in their own way, on their own terms first, and then go to a publisher versus sort of go to a publisher with an idea and then be sort of told how you have to do it and fit into there. It's better to show them versus telling them and say this. And so they see how awesome it is versus trying to convince them, trust me, it's going to be awesome if you let me do it my way. So it's much easier to do it. And then you have all the files ready to go and they can just take it from there.
I think that is the best advice you could give the listeners, because they think that, they truly believe that if their book is such a good idea that if they take it to a publisher will just publish it as is. And that's just not reality. I can see you shaking your head no. Because, so that doing it first on their own is really advice that I hope they listen to, because it saves a lot of heartache and frustration on both the artist's part and the publisher's part, you know.
Yeah.
They think they know what will sell, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't, right? So tell me where your inspiration comes from for a book.
Well, there's a few different people that have been, quite a few people that have been inspired. One on the sort of spiritual front, it's definitely John O'Donohue is a big, are you familiar with John O'Donohue?
I'm sorry to say I'm not.
No, I'll send you a link to some, just hearing him speak. He's from Ireland and he passed away about 10 years ago, but he, deep, beautiful cadence to his voice and soulful words. Alan Watts, for just taking you there and taking you out of the normal and into the deeper, wider vision of thinking of life. Mae Sarton, I love Mae Sarton's writing from Journal of a Solitude. And she really, to me, speaks to honoring the introverted life. Like that we, the first time I read Journal of a Solitude, I felt it was okay to be someone who restored and needed my quiet and alone time. And reading that in my 20s was a revolution for me. Mary Oliver, the poet, for just her emotion, the way she speaks is the emotional landscape and the natural world. Design-wise, these are my go-tos, are Robert Rauschenberg, the painter who did these amazing collage, big, big pieces. And he really blew open the walls of possibility in my mind. David Carson is a graphic designer who I talk a lot about, who back in the 90s was just bold, really did bold graphic work and these design spreads that just rocked my world. So, and then the third one is Cy Twombly, who's a painter who just was masterful with the scribble scrabble, this big scribble scrabble smearing great paintings. And I'm like, scribble scrabbling is a thing, because my dad used to always say, you do your scribble scrabble, Sprout, help me Sprout. So yeah, that was, he's a wonderful influence. So those are some of my favorite people.
Have you ever met any of your favorites?
No, I haven't. I could start crying about how much I wish I could have met John O'Donohue. I discovered him just before he died very suddenly at 52. And I could have sat down with anybody in this world, it would have been him. So yeah, I think that's
a goal. I know it's always been a goal of mine. I have not met it's taken me 20 years to meet you, but I have not met all of the people that I would like to meet that I admire. But I think at the end of the day, I do have a list, and I do try to go to their lectures or where they're having an opening for an art show. Sometimes you don't get to meet them personally, right? But you get to stand in the room and hear them speak and things like that. And I think that's such a gift that they give to those who love them so much. So that's the way I feel about you. So thank you very much for being part of this, because it's a gift to my readers and to me personally to get to know you better. I think you appreciate someone's work so much more when you know the secrets, you know, and a little bit about the behind the things that they hold dear to themselves. So tell us, what was the most game-changing decision you have made in your life?
Well, this came up for me, and it's a vulnerable thing, but it really was, when I think about my life, the most important thing for me was the decision to stop drinking in 2016. I'd never been someone who partied or went out a lot drinking, but I think in around 2009, 2010, I just started drinking wine a lot more and by myself and at home, and just thinking, oh, I've got to make this difficult call. I'll just have a glass of wine before I do it. And it just started becoming this thing I did. And I realized, and I was, you know, kind of horrified with myself, and no one really knew, but I was really turning to drinking in a way. And my grandmother, who I never met, died of it. And my dad always warned me to be really careful with it. I'm like, it's fine. Cause it wasn't a big part of my life when I was younger, but it was that decision to take that off the table for myself was brought me so much more peace. I think I really thought it was something I needed in order to feel relaxed and to create, you know, it started getting in my head that I needed it to create. Like, I didn't make any of my books drinking, but it can be a little voice in the head that thinks I need this for everything I'm doing. And it's, so that decision for me, was really big. I remember Brené Brown, hearing her talk about her decision to not drink. And that sort of was pivotal to hear her talk about how much that was a game changer for her as a human being and what she wanted to put in the world. So that's kind of and what's amazing is I'm wanting to share that now publicly, where I could never have talked about this before. I would just be so embarrassed and ashamed, you know? And so now I feel proud of it. And I feel it's important to talk about. I think women, it's advertised so much as a sort of as a lubricant to difficult days. And so for some people, that's totally fine. For me, it wasn't. So That was.
Well, and I think that's important. That's why it's so important for all of you to, or all of us, to share all of what we consider kind of our dark times or yeah. our secrets. Because what I know as I grow older is that we all have them.
Yeah.
And we all think we're the only ones who do, yeah. right? So if we get the support from all of you, then I think it's life changing for
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Like you heard Brené Brown. She is on my bucket list, someone I would like to meet in person that yeah. I would like to hear speak. I'm such a fan of hers. She's so brilliant. But the fact that she's brave enough, it takes a lot of bravery to share those yeah. secrets. It
yeah.
really is. And so it's nice. And I have to say thank you for yeah. myself and for those who are listening and those who follow you so much, because it's such a, I say this all the time, but it's such a gift. I mean, it's, I don't think artists realize that they share more than just their art. And I really do believe that that the things you share are a gift. I mean, we don't look at them like that. Sometimes we kind of downplay how important they are to other people, but sometimes it's the most important, loving, authentic gift you can give.
Truly.
Those yeah. secrets, right?
When people sort of have said things off the cuff at something, I think, you know, just it goes into my heart and I think, wow, just I'm so grateful that someone shared, you know, how it really feels. It's just it is such an important gift.
And they never know.
They never know.
The thing is, yeah. you never know how many people's lives you've touched.
Right.
And I think right. Sometimes I sit and imagine, I think, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, I really shouldn't have said that. Right. And I really,
right? yeah.
and then I'll get a post on Instagram or I'll get a text from somebody that says, thank you for saying that. And I think,
yes,
oh, maybe it's okay. Right. Maybe it helped.
And so, you know, I remember being given your book for Christmas by my mother years and years ago. And I think that was the first time giving me the permission to have a creative home environment and really celebrate my somewhat messy, creative, you know, handmade life of it was distinctly my own, you know, and I think I didn't see any of that around me in my life, the way I was, where I was living at that time. And I remember just, it's something I really treasured. So it was
thank you.
Very permission giving.
It was, I was inspired by Mary Engelbreit. She
yes.
had a section in her magazine that was called Studios, I think was what it was just called. And I actually got really brave one day and called her up and said, I think you should make Studios, excuse me, a larger section of your magazine, because it was only like a couple of pages and I wanted to see more.
Yeah. Right?
And she said, no, I don't want to do that. And I said, well, then you should write a book about it. And she said, no, I don't think I'll do that either. So I'm all about being upfront. So I said, then I'm going to write one, because I think people really want to see everybody's studios and hear their stories. And she said, okay. And so that's kind of, I mean, I've been a fan of hers for a very long time too. And I think she was such an inspiration to me way back when. And mm-hmm. I always think that you should give credit to the people who inspire you.
Yeah.
And what takes you off on a different track. Because yeah. can, like, for example, give us, if you were to think about it, if you were heading down a track, is there someone that you met or their work you saw that kind of just shifted and sent you in a different direction?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it was, you know, there's different, for different people for different reasons, but I think, like, I think of my friend Lori Wagner, who teaches wild writing. She's so comfortable in who she is and real. And I remember meeting her in my 20s and she was a mom at that time, and she's about 10 years older than me. And just the way her home and the environment and the realness and the way she talked true, you know, I those influences of women around me who talk truly and from the gut and from the heart is profoundly powerful when I experience that. We'll just go there and not try to be lovely and just, you know, I come from a lovely mother who's lovely, but I didn't see her lying around in sweatpants and just being in a bad mood and, you know, cussing or anything. And I think, not that I want a mom who's in sweatpants and cussing all the time, but I think it's great to sort of, and not that Lori's doing that either, but just that realness is just so appreciated.
That makes me laugh right out loud because my mother was very refined and my dad was a railroad guy and he talked like a truck driver and I'm just like my dad.
Yeah.
And I have the worst language and I try really, really hard to keep it under control. But in moments of pressure or, you know, when you need, when you have an instant reaction, my truck driver or my railroad language comes spewing out and my grandchildren are like, Grammy.
That's awesome.
I'm glad you had a lovely mother. I think that was something I always wanted to be. But tell us about your dog. I'm fascinated lately. We're actually doing a section called Pet Tales in the magazines.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated by artists and their pets. They're not always dogs, mostly, but I think you get an enormous insight into the artist when she talks about her pet for a minute.
I don't know, maybe we'll keep this in the podcast, maybe not. But I was joking with my husband the other day, because I've got this dog named Rome, who is a rescue dog, half doxy, half chihuahua. I've never been a small dog person, you know, definitely like more of a lab kind of person. And I said, probably one of the worst decisions I made while drinking was adopting my dog. Because once you have it, you got it till they die. I mean, that's a long, and he was such a he's moody, he's grumpy. I ended up adopting another sweet dog, Lucy, a few months after that. I adopted him at a garage sale and she was lovely and she passed away a couple of years ago and she was just the sweetest thing. But Rome has been a curmudgeon for a good 10 years and we just love him, but he can't have people over. I mean, he's just changed the whole dichotomy of my home. Like he's just barks and barks really loudly for a small, it's just, I thought if I hadn't been having that extra glass of wine, I may have not just spontaneously gone, picked that dog up and brought him home. So
I love that story because everybody, I always think I don't want to get a dog because I don't want to be the only person that gets the dog from hell that no one wants.
Yeah. Right?
Because everybody always talks about how wonderful their dogs are and what great companions they are. And I think not every dog is like that. I'm sure of it.
Nope.
Are proof positive that that is true.
When you decide not to have kids, you want to embrace the freedom of not having kids. You want to say, oh, I can leave and go. And I can go to Italy if I want to go to Italy. The only Italy I'm going to is that my dog's named after it. So I'd say home every day. But it costs me more to go to, more to board him and go to Italy than it does to go to Italy, I think. So.
Well, you are hilarious.
It's the truth.
I'm so glad I asked. And no, I'm not cutting it out.
Okay.
It's a great story. I think everybody needs to know that because I can just hear people thinking, yep, that's me. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Oh, right? Gosh.
Okay. So in our podcasts, I always ask someone to tell us a secret that most of your followers may not know.
I had a hard time with this one because I think I'm pretty an open book. But one detail is that I surprisingly love riding on the back of a Harley Davidson motorcycle.
Oh, you do?
Sean, when I met Sean, my husband, I never was someone who rode, took a second thought to guys on Harleys. But seeing him leaning against his Harley, walking out and seeing him, it gave me it opened a whole new world to me. And I really actually enjoy, it's a, you know, one of those cruising motorcycles. So it's not like you're riding on the back of a sports bike and it's like, there's a back seat and you can lean against it. but I find so much peace, and I can think, and I'm not worrying about the driving part and not crashing. I can just relax, sit in the back. But I love, and I get a lot of my creative ideas from just these long country road rides in Wisconsin. Just who ever thought I would end up in Wisconsin too? So
how did you end up in Wisconsin?
I was randomly teaching a workshop in Chicago and then Madison and then Minneapolis. And I came through Madison, and it's on the isthmus, so it's between two lakes, and the peace here and the quiet and the light being against two lakes, then the people, the kindness. Like, I went into the hardware store to get some paint for the workshop, and there's just these old guys working there and kind of a creaky wooden floors and dogs lying on the front porch. And I just thought, I want to live here. And I just moved there with my dogs and the next year. And I've been here ever since. I've never lived somewhere as long as I've lived here. So,
oh my gosh. I think you're probably the bravest person I've ever met. Not only the talented, most talented, but I would never dare do that. I mean, I was born and raised in Ogden, Utah, because I'm too afraid to go very far away.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, I travel, but moving is, I can't even imagine it.
And I only came with two suitcases. And I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Kiki Vanessa Johanning, because she was someone who was a reader of mine and had offered to lend me some furniture. And I just, because I'm like, I'm fine. I've got two suitcases. I'm good. And she helped. And then I shipped all a lot of my stuff in the next year. And then I eventually brought it all out here. But yeah, just pioneering it.
Kiki would not only have lent it to you, she would have put it in the back of her truck and driven it to you.
Oh, so she did.
She would have, right? Yeah. She is so generous. And
oh,
so
you know her. Yeah, she's
I
so
do awesome. Know her. Yeah. She came to a workshop in Ogden that was put on by Eat, Cake, Create and Sally. And I met her there, and she is such a presence. I love her. Right. She is, but she would be there for you.
Yeah.
At every turn in the bend.
Yeah. She really was. She really was.
So did you meet your husband in Wisconsin?
I did meet through mutual friends here. And I just loved him from a distance, from far. And then, and he'd come in and he'd have these like black, you know, riding chaps on, holding his helmet. And I'm just like, and then he confessed his love to me, and I couldn't believe it. And so we got married, and we're both the same age, and just really, really appreciative of each other. So he's,
I love that. Even your love life is a fairy tale story. You should write that in a book someday.
Yeah, he's a wonderful soul. So
is he a carpenter?
He's a carpenter. So yeah, he's very creative. He works on building houses, but he builds wood panels and helps. And he's a Virgo, so he's very, you know, he'll be filming me doing something, and I've got, you know, art paint everywhere, and I'm gonna lean over my pajama bottom smearing. He'll be like, "This is so cool, baby." And then he's like, oh, like I just take it that, and he's, you know, he's straight lines and measured, and I think I just throw his whole.
I'm sure you push his boundaries.
I do. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what you're thinking of in the next 5 years. I mean, you have your workshops going on this year, but what are you thinking you want to do maybe next year or the year after? Have you got plans, or do you just take it as like?
Oh, I love it. I would love to build a home. I've never owned a house, and I've been fine with that and love being able to have the freedom of living where I want to be, but I would love to build a home and be able to have a place for people to come and be creative with me. And that's something I really dream of doing. So I'm saving up for that.
Well, you'll have to let me know when it starts, and we'll track it as it goes.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah, right? Let's do that.
And then we can write the story and publish it in the magazine, because everybody's always so interested in that, the process and the planning and, you know, the end result. And what I love about artists so much is that your vision of a house is not just a house. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a place of creativity and gatherings and people sharing and all of those kinds of things. So it's really nice to follow your steps because you kind of get to enjoy the process. If you can't build your own, then you get to enjoy the process and the accomplishments of what you all create. And like, as I always say, that is such a gift to everyone else because not everyone can do that. Either financially or their spouses don't want them to, or whatever the reasons, right? Yeah. They're good reasons. They just can't. So when you start that, you need to record the steps of that.
Yes, I will. I will. That's wonderful. Over why the paper's rippling on this. And so I've really, this year is the first year of bringing in that full team to Jocelyn and Flo did it last year with students, but this year it's going to be something that's going to be interwoven into the whole time. So people, because the process is so circular, it's like it's not like step one, step two, step three, those we were talking about. It's the phases are revealed and shared in each module, but then you want to go back and work on this part of it, or then people can just find that support. So
tell me again when it's going to start.
It starts February 11th. The door is open for that.
And if people either don't hear about it or decide that they don't start in February, if it's July, can they go back and start again, or do they have to wait for next year?
It's going to open. It will open again 6 months after. Yeah. So it will open again in July.
Okay. So we'll put that on the website and everything. So it'll always be posted there and people will know. But I think sometimes people are afraid if they're not right in there on the first day, right, that they've lost the opportunity for until it starts again.
And so I don't have that confirmed that that's when I'm going to open it again. I would hope, but the great thing is it's lifetime access. So people get in and students now have taken it 3 years in a row. So,
oh, nice.
So there's just, it's just a wonderful community. It's really like-minded, great people. So, and there'll be a three-part workshop, the 8th, 9th, and 10th of February, that I'll be offering that I'll give you a link for that. So that's just helping envision the book and.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
If I get really brave, yeah. I'm going to take your workshop because I do not consider myself a creative and I get really intimidated when I get in situations like that. I just freeze right up. Right. So, but I do sit in the background and watch a lot, and people get a little bit frustrated with me, but it fills the need I have, right?
Yeah, to be creative. Yeah.
I think that's why I write the magazines, is because I get to be creative through all of you.
Absolutely.
So it's such a gift. I think I've said that 27 times in this podcast. Obviously, I'm a great lover of giving and receiving gifts. So okay, so to end our day, the other thing that I always ask is your favorite quote, and it's because I personally believe that it's easy to say something in a lot of words, and it's very difficult to say something in just a few words, and that's why I think I have people give their favorite quotes, because I think it speaks volumes about who you are and what you believe. So what is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is by Joseph Campbell. We must be willing to let go of the life we have planned in order to have the life that's been waiting for us. So it's just releasing that grip of things have to be this way, and trusting what's there to unfold in front of us is far more interesting and beautiful than anything we could have been controlling to try to make happen. Like staying open for the adventure.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Very nice. I have a wall of quotes. And so all of you have quotes that I'd never heard before. And so I always add them to my wall. So thank you, Sabrina, from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Joe. I really love this conversation.
I hope you'll come back.
Yes, absolutely. Would love to.
And for sure, I'm going to tell everybody that you've agreed to have your studio featured in the magazine, right?
Yes.
So they can look forward to that?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that. I'm pretty
okay.
I can get pretty aggressive with that. The only disappointment that I have during our podcast From the Kitchen Table is when our time is over for today. It is such an honor for me to be able to create a moment for each of us to be together to share our stories. I can promise you, and you can trust me, no matter how easy these guests make the journey appear, it wasn't. They each started by taking the first step, together and alone, frightened and inspired, ready or not, each one moving ever forward, simply doing what they love to do, and that is create. Because we are a community which is based on our support of one another, please remember to leave a review. Leave a review not only for these magazines, but for each other. It is a small investment of your time and yet an enormous gift to each of our guests that are working so very hard to be the best they can be in their chosen field. If you have any questions or want to know more, please visit womencreate.com. As you know, I am a lover of quotes, and to end this chapter of From My Kitchen Table, I want to share my favorite quote with you. And that is, I love each of you and all of you with 1,000 hearts. Until our next From My Kitchen Table, stay safe, keep notes, and take lots of pictures. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Joe.
Bye.
Bye.